And so the one claimed he was an Englishman, and the other claimed that it was an English navigator, the other one claimed it was a rear gunner, and it was a Canadian. It's strange, he looked to me like sort of Indian-like, low brow, very unfriendly, which made all of us even more suspicious. They said, Ed, talk with him, see if you can find out. Let's see, you know, you might be wrong. This might be a setup, you know. And so I sat this guy down and I said, what's your name? And he said, I'm Fred Sutherland. I said, so where are you from, Fred? And he said, I come from Canada. Oh, very interesting. Where in Canada? He said, Alberta. Oh, I said, Alberta. I never heard of that person. I said, where in Alberta? He said, what was it? Something like Red River City or something like that. Red River City or River City. At this point, I thought, this is stupid. I mean, any German spy could have learned this by heart. You know, I got to ask some question. Something came to me and I said to him, what do you do as a hobby there in River City in Alberta? He looked angrily at me. He said, we hunt bear. I said, he's all right. No German could have invented that kind of thing. Fred and I are still in constant contact in Alberta. We've been together. We've climbed mountains together in Alberta.
You've kept up contact with this fellow.
Didn't keep up contact then. They were, sometime later, they were smuggled out through Belgium, through France, through Paris, to the Pyrenees, back to England, back to Canada. So that was fascinating. At the end of December, it's now December 1943, you know, I went into hiding, as I told you, October 1942, right? Mm-hmm. October 23, 1942, went into hiding, it's now December, the end of December 1943, and I've been on the run and hiding and this and that and for about more than a year, and we intercept a message, a German message, that they've become suspicious of our woods. Mm-hmm. They have seen people walking, have been signaled people walking around there. And it was immediately decided that this was a danger sign and that we should set up watch posts. And we, by this time I had graduated to practically a member of the group. And we had to pick numbers out of a hat to see what watch you got. I got the watch of the December 29, 1943, 4 a.m. to 8 a.m., together with a buddy. I was issued a 9mm Mauser semi-automatic handgun, shown how to load it, aim it, fire it, put the safety on, took the safety off. And on December 29, 5 a.m., you could have found me standing with next to my buddy, who was similarly armed, behind the last row of trees of our woods, watching the gravel road that went by.
And you were there basically to give warning. Was that the idea? You were there to give warning,
yes,
to see if the Germans
warned the others who were sleeping in the bunk beds in the hut, the other six men. And everything was very quiet. It wasn't very cold, I remember, although it was the 29th of December. But suddenly, we heard truck tires crunching on the gravel in the distance, and soon we saw the blue slits of wartime German trucks, mm-hmm, coming around the bend, and there were five of them. They slowly crawled up to right in front of us. We could see them standing behind the trees. And then the lights went off. And then I heard the first German commands. And it seemed in the half dark, I could see soldiers coming off those trucks. It suddenly struck me. They were there to kill us. They were going to murder all of us. Well, of course, my head screamed, "Ed, run away. Run. You're going to save yourself." Well, I don't know. It was all panic, of course. And I blamed the heavy weight of the 9mm Mauser in my pocket for not running away and remembering that there were six men somehow relying on us. And so we ran the zigzagging path back in and stormed into the hut, tearing the blankets off the man who was sleeping in the bunk beds and yelling at them, "Get up, the SS is here, it's a raid, save yourselves." And the man, of course, in the middle of their sleep, you know, trying to find, jumping out of their beds and trying to find shoes, clothes, anything to run. And my buddy and I, when we saw that they were all out of their beds, we didn't wait any longer. We crashed sideways through the undergrowth until we came to a dirt road that was the boundary of our parcel of woods. And then there was another parcel beyond that. So before we jumped across the dirt road, it seemed to me, when I looked to the left and looked to the right, it seemed to me I saw the Germans coming around the corners already. And we jumped, and I was quite sure that nobody in the hut would make it out alive. But we ran and we crashed on through the undergrowth, and as far as we got to, the hearts bursting in our chest until we were far away from that terrible scene.
Did you hear anything behind you? Did you hear rifle shots? Or
no, didn't hear anything. No rifle shots, no. We had previously, in a council, we had made a decision that if there ever was a raid on the hut, that those who managed to escape would regroup about 8 miles away in another part of the forest, not far from the city of Hilversum. And so there's a whole day's story in between in that day, but I'll not go into that detail. The main thing is that at 8 o'clock at night, my buddy and I stood behind some large trees there, around a little clearing in the woods. That was the place, place where we were supposed to meet the others. With our guns in hand. And I thought about it, and I thought, what has happened is this. The man in the hut didn't make it out, of course. They were taken to the Gestapo headquarters in Amsterdam, probably tortured, and revealed that two men were still standing somewhere there near Hilversum, waiting for them. And so I expected that pretty soon the SS would show up to catch us. And whatever came up, I thought that it might be a single person, they might try a trap, you know.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Greg?
Yeah.
Yes?
I'm ready. We're still rolling.
Whatever happened, I thought, they're going to come, and they're going to try either arrest us or kill us.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, I have a weapon, I have a gun. It's crazy, I was 17 years old, you know. And I said, when they come, if they come, I will try and kill one of them. And they'll mow me down in a second, of course. You know, they're these wonderful Smicer machine pistols the Germans had. And I thought that would be a better way to die than to be taken prisoner by them, tortured, you know, in the Gestapo basements in Amsterdam.
Because you had heard stories at this point.
Oh, that was well known. I know the address, the Merveda Street in was the place where this took place. Especially I was a Jew, in addition to everything else. I would never make it out alive. And I figured that'd be a faster, speedier death than just being, you know. So, we stood there and waited. And then a very curious sound came through the woods. It was a sound of rattling sheet metal and of like a wheel thumping, on the dirt of the path through the woods. And pretty soon, out of the darkness, out of the woods, through a path, came a little circle of a little flashlight. Someone comes coming on a rattly bicycle and came right in front of us in that clearing. We standing behind these big trees. We slid the safety of our guns. I said, this is it. That bike rider got off the bike and never moved. I thought, it's a trap. The minute that we step out from behind our trees, he'll either shoot us or he'll try to arrest us. So we, as I said, we slid the safety off and finger on the trigger, we waited. Nothing happened. That bike rider was silent. And finally we decided, we said, we gotta move, you know. So we started approaching the bike rider step by step, finger on the trigger, ready to fire at anyone. I was gonna kill this bastard, whoever it was on there. And when we got to the bike rider, it wasn't a German. It wasn't one of the men from the hut either. The person who'd come on that bike was my mother.
How would she know? How had she known where to find you?
I've never found out. She found out about the raid on the hut that morning, even found out the regrouping place where we were waiting, and had immediately decided she must come and rescue us. And the first thing she said was, bury those guns. We said, are you crazy? It's the only defense we have. She said, you don't know it, but we're totally surrounded here by hundreds of Wehrmacht and SS. They're still looking for you. So we buried our precious Mausers and had no defenses left. And then my buddy, my partner, said that he knew a place where he could go and hide, but he needed a bicycle. So my mother gave him her rattly bike. It was rattly because it had wooden tires. You see, by that time, the Germans, having stolen every piece of rubber out of Europe, the Dutch made tires out of wood. Mm-hmm. Your bicycle didn't last too long with that, of course, and that it rattled apart. Then she had that little flashlight, and maybe I should explain to you about the little flashlight, because
sure.
it plays a very important part.
Please, I just want to say, this is the ultimate Jewish mother story you're telling.
This is the ultimate Jewish mother story, absolutely. My mother gave him the bicycle, and she gave him that little flashlight about which I'll tell about later. And he pedaled off into the darkness of the woods, and that left my mother and me standing surrounded by Germans in the night in the woods. And my mother thought and thought, and she said, Ed, I told you she never gave up, but she was very despondent. She said, Ed, I have one idea. She said, it probably will not work. But she said, at least you buried your guns so that if we come across Germans, at least they frisk us for weapons. We will not have weapons. Otherwise, they would probably execute us right here in the woods. But she said, I have an idea, but as I said, it probably won't work. But it's the only thing I can think of, and to get out of this. And she told me what to do.
It's middle of the night, right? It's mm-hmm. It's the middle of the night. What time of day is this?
Well, it was 8. It's 29th of December, mm-hmm. And it's 8 o'clock at night. It's now 9 o'clock at night. It's pitch dark. Wasn't very cold, but it was pitch dark. And we started walking on a path through the woods towards where that circle of German guards should be. And soon enough, we saw in the distance, at the end of the path, there was a German soldier walking back and forth with his shouldered rifle. And then my mother said, okay, Ed, now we have to do this. And I did what she had told me to do. We put our arms around each other very tightly. We put our heads together. We started to talk very loud and make giggling sounds and even kissing sounds. very tightly embraced, and we walked towards the German who was there. And when we came very close, we shouted at him, "Hello!" I don't know where I got the fucking courage to do this, sorry, but where I got the courage to do this. And the German said, "Halt!" Pointed his rifle at us. And he had been told to arrest those dangerous resistance, armed resistance fighters who were out there someplace. And what he saw coming out of the woods was this couple, you know, kissing and fun. And he had to make up his mind, and we stood there. It seemed like ages, but God knows, it may have been a minute and a half, 2 minutes maybe at most. Well, he was trying to make up his mind, maybe vis-a-vis his officers, maybe whatever, you know. But I realized that by his decision, we were either going to live or we were going to die. And after a while, he made up his mind, and he said in German, "Na also, gehen Sie! Go!" And we said, "Thank you very much." Even German, "Danke schön." And we embraced even tighter, and giggling, and very slowly, step by step, we walked out of that circle of death, as I said, to live another day. That was my mother.
It's an amazing story. And you never, but you never found out how she found you.
No, I never really asked. You know, you didn't. We didn't talk about the Holocaust after the war. You think my wife and I talk about the Holocaust? I should have. My brother interviewed her, and as I said, but he didn't ask that question. He asked other questions, more general questions. This was. There were certain details that you never found out.
So what happened next? Where did you go?
Well, what happened next is that I spent one night at my parents' hiding place, but I couldn't stay there for very long.
Your parents were hiding together?
Yeah, my father and mother were together in a room in a small house with, I said, a childless older couple.
When you say they were in hiding, did they never leave the house, or did they...
Well, my mother left the house to take care of her children, her sons. She was the contact person. She traveled on those constantly Gestapo-controlled trains to find hiding places for my little brothers, and for me sometimes. And
why was she able to travel so freely? Did she not look Jewish? Or
she had a lot of chutzpah. She had a lot of chutzpah. And she didn't look particularly Jewish.
And she had a false identity card. Is that the idea?
Oh yes. She should have had a better one. Would have saved a lot of suffering for her. But an elderly couple who lived in a sort of a mansion offered me for a couple of weeks a hiding place on the second floor. I got a gorgeous room overlooking beautiful lawns, and there I had a couple of weeks to stop shaking. I was very close to a nervous breakdown. I've been twice close to death that same day.
Did you have any sort of a sense? This is now, we're now talking sort of early January of 1944. The invasion of Europe is about 6 months away. Did you have any sense of the larger course of the war? I mean, you said you listened to the BBC occasionally, but did you have any reliable information? What was going on outside of Holland?
Yes, some sort of rumors. Well, in the hut with the resistance group, we had news through secret radio, BBC, from London. But after that, I was totally isolated. I haven't the faintest idea what was going on. Didn't know. Didn't know about. Did hear about the invasion, the landing on June 6, 1944. The Allied landing, somehow. It was a major thing. But I couldn't stay there very long in that room. After 2 weeks, I got a new pair of wooden shoes. I bleached my hair again. I got religion there in that room.
Sorry?
I got religion in that room.
Mm-hmm.
I found a book called the Old Testament as Literature, and I don't want to go into too much detail, but I opened it once. My family nobody ever read in the Bible, and I thought it was a tome, big volume, bound in linen, beautiful book. I thought that might be interesting to see what's in there, you know. And I put my thumb in it and I opened it, and I came to a page of Yeshayahu. I forgot the English name for Yeshayahu.
Ezekiel? Ezekiel? No, Isaiah?
Yeshayahu.
Isaiah?
A prophet.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Isaiah, it could be Ezekiel. I'm...
The one with a J, starts with a J.
No. My own Bible's knowledge is not that great, unfortunately.
That's terrible. But anyway, it was in Hebrew, it's Yeshayahu, something like. Anyway, I opened this book, I put my thumb in it, and I read the words of Yeshayahu, a Jew who had lived 3,000-4,000 years before. And it said, "And you shall try to hide, but there will be no hiding places. And you shall try and sell yourself, but there will be no buyers." This is what's happening to me. This Jew who lived thousands of years ago, he knew. And I thought, this is my book. I've got to read this book. I turned to page one and started in the beginning. And I began to read, man. For the few days